The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is actress Judy Kaye, who has starred on Broadway, television, and movies, in musicals and plays with nearly every prominent star of the past 40 years. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom! Well, Libya is the latest Arab country to fall into rioting and anti-government protests and revolution following Tunisia and then Egypt. A mostly desert emptiness with lots of oil wells. Libya has 6.5 million people, roughly the population of Arizona, and the 17th largest country in the world. Libya's been headed by the borderline insane Muammar Gaddafi ever since his military coup in 1969. That is 41 years, if you're counting. Gaddafi was a 27-year-old captain in the military at the time. He conquered the country with a total of about 20 other guys, all using pistols. And since Libya's neighbors west and east have now overthrown their dictators, it looks like it's his turn to go. Libya's history is quite extensive, not like Egypt's, but it includes important periods of Phoenician, Greek, Roman, Byzantine, Arab, Norman, Turkish, Italian, and British controller influence. At times past, Libya has been an important and wealthy country, and with its huge oil revenues, it should be so today. But, like all the Arab kleptocracies, the ruling family has stolen most of the money. Now, crazy Gaddafi, the sponsor of terrorists and a bit of a pariah even among the other unstable dictators, kings, and sheikhs of the Arab and African worlds, is toppling. And unlike the fairly reasonable Hosni Mubarak, Gaddafi is trying to kill as many of his own people as he can, and shades of Saddam Hussein is threatening to burn his own oil wells. Nothing like bringing the house down on top of you when you go. Libya had an ancient and significant Jewish community well before Roman times, going back over 2,000 years. As recently as World War II, Tripoli, its major city, was at least a quarter Jewish and had 44 synagogues, while its second city of Benghazi had an important Jewish quarter. But repression by Italian fascists was followed by Nazi German massacres and deportations, which was followed by Arab riots and pogroms, all of which led to a mass exodus of Libyan Jews to Israel, Rome, the U.S., and elsewhere in the civilized world. Gaddafi did not improve matters when he took power back in 69, by which time there were only about 100 Jews left in Libya. Under his rule, all Jewish property was confiscated, all debts to Jews were canceled, and emigration for Jews was prohibited by law. Still, some Jews got out, and by 1974, only 20 Jews lived in Libya. By 82 or so, the last Jew left or died in Libya, ending about 2,300 years of a resident Jewish community. Perhaps the most prominent Libyan-descended Jew is Moshe Kalon, the Israeli Minister for Welfare and Social Services in the current Likud government. The other Libyan Jew people might have heard of was Yosef Romano, the Israeli Olympic weightlifter who fought back during the Munich Black September kidnapping in 1972 and was the second Israeli Olympic athlete murdered in that terrible event. So, Libya is gone, and the rest of the Arab world trembles, and the Western oil-consuming nations begin to look, worried. Who's next? Morocco? Algeria? Jordan? Saudi Arabia? Bahrain? Get in line. The fascinating unanswered question is, what will succeed these autocratic secular regimes? Will it be Islamists, the best organized part of the resistance everywhere? Or will some sort of representative democracy actually emerge? In Libya, at least, we can't expect a much more anti-American regime, although Gaddafi has tried to cozy up to the U.S. in recent years after getting in little shooting battles with the U.S. Navy at various times, all of which Libya unsurprisingly lost. We will stay tuned. Big times and big change in the Middle East, but it's not at all clear what will follow. Well, to play us in this morning, here's a Libyan Jewish singer from Israel, naturally, Shlomit Buchnik, singing a wonderful, energetic Libyan Jewish wedding song, Shir Lechatan Ulekala. Libyan Jewish wedding song in honor of the long exiled Libyan Jewish community. You know, it's a very odd thing. This creeping collapse of the dictatorships across Arab North Africa has given me the opportunity on Too Jewish to explore and play wonderful Jewish music from communities we often tend to neglect. A peculiar motivation to find some really wonderful elements of different and beautiful Jewish cultures that flourish, now transplanted into Israel mostly. It's rodeo weekend here in Tucson, Arizona, in the heart of the West where I live, so we need at least a bit of a Western theme this morning, don't we? Can't really understand what a big deal rodeo is here in Tucson unless you live here. To most people in America, let alone most Jews, the idea that schools were out for 2 days this week for rodeo, of all things, impresses people as absurd and beyond archaic. Do we close for the county fair, too? How about Decoration Day? And yet, when you live as we do in the heart of the West, not far from Tombstone, and in what was Apache country not much over a century ago, rodeo is still a pretty big deal. While sometimes in the Southwest we get a little testy about the stereotypes of deserts and cowboys and the label of overgrown cowtown we tend to have foisted upon us, sometimes we still actually seek out and embrace those stereotypes. Basically, Rodeo Week in Tucson is a big parade, the world's largest non-motorized parade for those keeping score, followed by, I know this will shock you, a rodeo. We let kids out of school, go to the parade, wear cowboy boots and hats and such, and generally pretend that we still have some vague connection to the folks who rode horses and tamed the Wild West. Well, you might not immediately associate Jews with cowboys, but it's worth noting that there were important Jews even in the Old West. The legendary O.K. Corral gunslinger and lawman Wyatt Earp's wife, well, his last one anyway, was a Jewish woman named Josephine Marcus. There were Jewish mayors and sheriffs and even outlaws, Jewish ranchers and lawmen and miners, and of course, Jewish peddlers and shopkeepers. Oh, and those ubiquitous jeans that everybody wears were pioneered by a Jewish guy, Levi Strauss, a Jewish immigrant from Bavaria who came to the Gold Country in 1850 and co-invented the denims that sat on all those saddles that blazed through the Wild West. He and his partner, another Jewish tailor named Jacob Davis, the one who patented the rivets that hold on the pockets, made Levi's the preferred pants of the cowboy set. So on this rodeo weekend, we offer a toast to the Jews who helped win and tame the Wild West. When we return in a few moments on Too Jewish, we'll meet our guest, the delightful Judy Kaye, who's starred on Broadway with nearly every theatrical star of the past 40 years. She'll tell us her favorite roles and actors when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You hear a lot of people say consistency is a good thing. After all, some places have built their reputations on consistency. Well, I gotta tell you, consistency can also mean mediocrity. If you want something to be great, it has to go through an evolution. That's why at Mama's, if we find a better tomato, we'll use it. Cheese is the same way. A cow eats grain during the winter. In the spring, he's outside eating grass. What we do at Mama's is look for the best there is and go with it. All this goes to show that at Mama's, we don't strive for consistency, except that we want to consistently be the best. Come on into Mama's and find out more about our theory of pizza evolution. It's not controversial, but it's real tasty. Mama's Pizza, 4500 East Speedway in the Midway Business Park. On the east side of 22nd and Cobb and back at the Fry Shopping Center. On the north side at the southwest corner of Oracle and McGee. And our newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum. With a variety of music and fine arts classes, combined with the award-winning sports programs, THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, and respect for diversity. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life, builds a strong sense of community. They're enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888. Or visit www.thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Judy Kaye. Judy is an actress, performer, singer, sort of all-around entertainment. What's the right term, you know?
Person.
Okay, entertainment person. I'm completely biased towards her because she went to UCLA, which is, of course, the best university in the universe since, you know, I went there. Tell us a little bit about your first big break.
My very first big break, well, I guess it would have to be when I was hired out of what we call an open call, where union and non-union actors...
Cattle call, they call
them. Cattle call. We throw our hats in the ring and for a couple of roles in a show. And in this case, it was in Hollywood. I was a student at UCLA, and I went to this open call to audition for the role of Lucy Van Pelt in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown... in Hollywood. It was a big deal when this show went to L.A., and I was hired out of this open call, 600 people, and I got the part. So I guess I would have to say that was the first really
big break.
Yeah.
So you made a career out of playing Huddle and Fiddler on the Roof for a while.
I did it quite a bit, yeah.
You played opposite Theodore Bickel, who actually just did that a year ago here in Tucson again. You played
amazing
guy, Jan Pierce, also a former guest of Two Jewish, by the way. Got to plug my own thing. Jan Pierce, Robert Merrill. Who was the best?
Oh, golly. Well, you know, Theo is kind of a complete package. He's a really, really wonderful actor, and he was my first, and it was in Honolulu, so how can you beat that, right? So I really kind of developed Huddle with him. Actually, eventually, I played Seidel, too, so I never did a Chava, but...
it's not as good a part, actually.
It's actually a heartbreaking little part, but
a little more pathos, that's true.
Yeah, mostly I was a Huddle, but I loved working with Jan. Robert Merrill was a lovely man, but he might have been in a different show than me, but that's okay. did I really say that on the air?
Well, you did, but in your bio it said, so let's just pretend, you know. By the way, both Robert Merrill, Jan Pierce did, you know, was a cantor, so I'm a little biased towards Jan Pierce, too.
He was a papa. He and Theo were real papas. They were really, I got, the run with Jan Pierce was much shorter, of course, and it was up in Sacramento, so it was a very intense couple of weeks, but Theo and then Theo and I have worked together again. We did a show, other Shalom Aleichem stories that we did in Florida several years back with Bruce Adler, the three of us. And
fun!
Yeah, it was. I miss Bruce so much. But we toured around several theaters a couple of times actually, and it was other stories told dramatically and lots of songs and just the three of us. So we have become really good pals over the years.
We will talk much more with actress, singer, performer Judy Kay, who's in the show Lost in Yonkers, among many, many other impressive accomplishments when we come back in a few moments on Two Jewish.
Choosing the proper care for your mother, father, or other loved one isn't easy. David Shackman and his wife Ann are New Yorkers who recently found a home at Handmaker, Tucson's premier provider of assisted living and senior care.
I'm 88 years old. My wife is 86. And we like staying at Handmaker because people here are very courteous and the atmosphere is nice.
Well, I like the program here because they have entertainers, have a bingo. They made a luau with Hawaiian dances.
Handmaker gives their son, Ken, peace of mind.
I know that they are going to get good service and the staff will treat them as friends.
Handmaker, centrally located on Rosemont just south of Grant, includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, and Tucson's most caring staff. Call 881-2323.
The food here is excellent. It's as good as any good restaurant in New York City.
For a consultation and tour, call 881-2323 or go to handmaker.org.
Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Do A Deer to My Favorite Things, in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. There is another great and only vaguely Jewish event this week, the beginning of spring training. Best way to see a ball game. With the Cactus League throwing out its first pitch this coming week, and in celebration of spring, and to give us Jews a leg up on spring training ball for the 2011 season, here's Mandy Patinkin's Yiddish version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Koyf mir den Nisloch von Cracker Jack Will ich kein Muls und dort nicht weg Ich seh gut, mut, mut, die Ballspieler Es passt nicht, als man verspielt Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Spikes Neues bei der Baseballspiel
Mandy Patinkin singing Take Me Out to the Ballgame in Yiddish for the coming of baseball's spring training. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Boker Tov. Good morning, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about all the change in the Middle East, the winds of democracy, but who knows where it's all going to be blown to. Islamist, the democratic, something in between, another autocracy. How do Israelis feel about the change in Egypt? What's the perspective on the Israeli street, the Israeli government? What's the perception?
Well, I think the Israeli government is very cautious not to say things that are very clear at this moment. They do not want to be conceived as someone who is trying to pull the strings within the internal things in Egypt. I think at the streets in Israel, you would find significant concern. Many people appreciate the peace treaty with Egypt, and many people believe that the changes in Egypt might end up in, changing the peace treaty or maybe even canceling it. Another concern is regarding the Sinai desert, the Sinai area, which it seems that Egypt might start neglecting, and that might create a void where we have seen Al-Qaeda representative that are approaching Bedouins across Sinai in an attempt to create there something that won't be very good for Israel.
The Bedouin, the story I saw was that as the Egyptian troops left, the Bedouin kind of took over the Sinai. Is Israel concerned, it seems like they are, of the strategic possibility of had the peace, Israel could focus on northern borders, focus on dealing with the Palestinians, didn't really have to think about the southern border except as arms were being shipped in or something. That's not true anymore, is it? Or we just don't know?
As we don't know implies that that's not true anymore, because we cannot take that for granted. Israelis did tend to take the peace treaty with Egypt for granted for the last 30 years, probably. And now suddenly things are changing. Another concern might be the concern from refugees. There are some voices that suggest that the changes in Egypt, if they will lead to a more extreme regime, will end up sending thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Arab refugees that will seek refugee within Israel. And I'm not sure Israel can handle such a huge phenomenon.
Interesting problem. Maybe if Mubarak wants to move to Tel Aviv, they'll have a difficult decision to make, huh?
Well, from what I hear from the newspaper, he will probably have the money to buy an apartment
in
Tel Aviv, what most Israelis don't have.
Well, it looks like that, you know, it shouldn't cost more than $3 or $4 billion for a nice piece of land in a Tel Aviv skyscraper. Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant at the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi. Please forgive me.
Oh, well, you know, I'm in that business.
I've opened another restaurant.
Downtown?
Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, 135 South 6th. I got to tell you, I am so excited about it. We have created an absolutely gorgeous space where the former Barrio Grill was located. And the food, well, you know my food.
Your food is the best I've ever had. Don't tell my wife. although she agrees. So you're creating magic food, as she calls it, downtown. What's the best way for people to make reservations to try the new place?
Just give us a call at 623-7700 or go online at downtownkitchen.com. We're serving lunch Monday through Saturday, dinner 7 days a week, happy hour, late night Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and all with prices so low, you can afford to eat here every day.
I would love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about Egypt on the Two Jewish Show, as well, nearly everyone in the world for the last several weeks. Sometimes appearances are deceiving. Looks like a huge public uprising against the long-time dictator of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, who looked no more vulnerable than, I don't know, a brick wall a month ago, and then suddenly all this exploded, or 2 months ago anyway. What do we need to make of all of this?
Well, obviously it's a complicated question, which can't really be dealt with while standing on one foot. The first thing is, let's be clear, at least for the record, that it didn't start like out of nowhere in Egypt. It started in Tunisia, and maybe it started earlier with the protests in Iran, which is a much more repressive place than either Egypt or Tunisia. Although Iran is not part of the Arab world, it is certainly part of the Islamic world. Then let's say that in some sense, most of the Arab world is connected, not only by a common written language, even if they can't understand each other when they speak, but also by a common history and, to a great extent, a common faith. Although, let's add quickly, Egypt is at least 10% Christians.
Coptic Christian.
Right, exactly. One of the monophysite branches of the early church.
One of the oldest branches of the church.
Right. And one of the oldest schisms in church history. I mean, what distinguishes all the monophysites, including the Copts, from, let's say, Roman Catholics or most Protestants or whatever, is they believe that God only has one nature, not human and divine and the Holy Spirit. So they really reject the notion of the Trinity. It's a very fundamental difference. And Egypt has an ancient, now very tiny Jewish community. And Egypt is, in some ways, a very heterodox place. Also, Egypt is not only central geographically to the Arab world, but intellectually and politically, Egypt was long the leader. I mean, the Saudis had the money, but the Egyptians had the brains, the universities, Al-Ahram, one of the oldest universities in the world. And when there was little in the Arab world for the Arabs themselves to respect, before oil was important, before all that, Egypt was looked to with respect as an exemplar and as a leader, in part because it had this ancient pre-Islamic culture that gave it a real national identity that other Arab countries, being mere provinces of the Ottoman Empire, lacked completely.
What's the term that people use? Tribes with flags?
Right. But that's not true of the Egyptians.
Of course.
Egypt is a real nation with a real national identity. And if you deal with Egyptians, you find that they have a certain self-confidence that most other Arabs lack. That makes them less obsequious. It makes them sometimes less malleable, less easy to deal with. But this current unrest in the Arab world, to which we'll obviously have to return next week, didn't start in Egypt, and it's unlikely to end there.
Right. We'll look forward to it. It's an interesting and complicated and, I think, rich subject. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. Your Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is not feeling well. He's concerned about his mortality, so he goes to consult a psychic about the date of his death. Closing her eyes, silently reaching out into the realm of the future, she finds the answer. You will die on a Jewish holiday. Which one? Ahmadinejad asks nervously. It doesn't matter, replies the psychic. Whenever you die, it will be a Jewish holiday. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special featured to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. I believe the first version of that joke applied to Haman? And now a word of Torah. This week we finish reading the book of Exodus with the Torah portion of Pikudei, completing the work and dedication of the tabernacle, first central place of worship, for Jews. The purpose of this shrine is a little unclear in the Torah. After all, if God exists beyond time and space and has no physical manifestation at all, that is, if the Jewish idea of God is right, why does God need any kind of fixed place of residence at all? The answer is that it isn't God who needs the tabernacle or the temple in Jerusalem or any sanctuary, chapel, or synagogue or temple anywhere in the world at any time in history. We need it. You see, human beings can think abstractly. We can say that we don't need rituals or rites, that we're much too sophisticated to require places for prayer. We will certainly say that we don't need to pray at all. But when we are alone or in pain, when we are lost, when our minds aren't dulled by television or email or Facebook or the internet or some other distraction, we find that we still have spiritual needs. And those needs are not abstract, but concrete. We need a place of solace and separation from the outside world, a location we can seek God and our own best nature in serenity and peace. In short, we still need a temple, just as our ancestors did, for it is there that we find holiness in a world dedicated to the ordinary. You know, you can pray anywhere, but having a place of beauty and specific sanctity can make all the difference. Poet Ruth Brin wrote, "Babel was built to defy deity, to declare the dominion of man. Bricks were passed from hand to hand for a whole year to reach the masons at work at the top of the tower. Thus, when a brick fell, they wept. But when a man toppled to his death, they turned their backs. The Tower of Babel was built to glorify man, but they achieved instead degradation and destruction. The sanctuary was built in obedience to God, in recognition of God's dominion. The tent proved to be far greater than the tower. Hangings of cloth outlasted brick and mortar. In the ark built to the glory of God, we find our own essential glory, righteousness and holiness, in imitation of God." When we come back on Too Jewish, the very talented Judy Kaye will regale us with stories about her long and busy career as a Broadway star and co-star. Find out what the best roles are when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
For Former White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel was elected mayor of Chicago this week, easily overwhelming five rivals to take the helm of the nation's third largest city as it prepares to chart a new course without the retiring Richard Daley. Emanuel trounced five opponents, garnering 55% of the vote, a margin that allowed him to avoid a runoff in April. This was the city's first mayoral race in more than 60 years without an incumbent on the ballot, the first in more than two decades without Daley among the candidates. Between Daley and his father, they led Chicago for more than 43 out of the last 56 years. Rahm Emanuel called the victory humbling. He thanked Daley for his lifetime of service, saying the outgoing mayor had earned a special place in our hearts and history. But then he said, "We've not won anything until a kid can go to school thinking of studies and not safety, until the parent of that child is thinking about work and not where they're going to find work." Rahm Emanuel is 51. He will be Chicago's first Jewish mayor. He worked for two presidents and served three terms representing the North Side in the House of Representatives. Emanuel had just been elected to his fourth term in Congress back in 2008 when he resigned to work for fellow Chicagoan President Barack Obama as his chief of staff. He left the White House in October of last year to run for mayor. He's also worked as a top aide to Bill Clinton. During his time in Congress, Rahm Emanuel was chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, credited with leading Democrats to victory in 2006 when they won the majority after a dozen years in the minority. Mazel tov to Mayor-elect Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. And in news of a huge prize that I have personally never heard of until now and don't really understand, Jewish filmmaking brothers Joel and Ethan Cohen, who have produced and directed 15 films, will receive a $1 million prize for their contributions to filmmaking. Tel Aviv University announced the recipients of the International Dan David Prize, maybe it's Dan David, I'm not sure, which annually makes three awards for outstanding achievement in the categories of past, present, and future time dimensions. I am not making this up. The Coen brothers were awarded the prize in the present category for their ability to tell a simple story in a complex manner. I thought it took a rabbi to do that. The Coen brothers are known for their cult films Raising Arizona and The Big Lebowski, as well as the Academy Award-winning films Fargo and No Country for Old Men, the Jewish-themed A Serious Man, and last year's True Grit, currently nominated for 10 Oscars. The past category prize went to Professor Marcus Feldman of Stanford for his work in the evolutionary sciences, Professor Cynthia Kenyon of the University of California at San Francisco, and Harvard Medical School Professor Gary Rovkin will share the future prize for their work in gerontology. No word on when they will receive the future prize, but I'm sure it will be in the future. Just kidding. The laureates, who donate 10% of their prize money to 20 doctoral and postdoctoral scholarships, will be honored at a ceremony in May at Tel Aviv University. The prize is named for international businessman and philanthropist Dan David. Have you ever heard of it before? Have you ever heard of him before? Well, now you have. The Coen brothers and evolutionary scientists and gerontologists. Curious. And in a very interesting story, it has emerged that the life-saving bandages used by first responders in the terrible January 8th Tucson shootings were the colloquially named Israeli bandages. They are credited with saving lives in the shooting here in Tucson that left six dead and 13 wounded. Pima County officials displayed them at a January 21st news conference. The county switched last June to the upgraded gear, and the shooting was its first major field test. Without this care, it would have definitely been a different situation, Dr. Catherine Hiller, who attended the wounded at University Medical Center, said. It's not clear if the Israeli bandage was applied to Giffords. The details of the day are lost in the chaos. But the bandage is known for, among other things, staunching head wounds, one of the greatest challenges with regular bandages. One Israeli model covers both entry and exit wounds, which we know Giffords sustained. The bandage applies a sterile pad to the wound to stop the blood, but what distinguishes it is that a built-in applicator applies the equivalent of up to 30 pounds of pressure by wrapping it in the opposite direction of the initial wrap. Head wounds require multiple standard bandages to keep a pad in place and are nowhere near as effective. One Israeli bandage with its elasticized cloth is enough for a head wound, and the very act of wrapping it around the head applies pressure. That saves precious time, and the applied pressure applicator, because it's built in, is more stable than the other pressures used with conventional bandages. There's a story behind this. Since its 1993 invention, the Israeli bandage has become standard issue in militaries throughout the world. The U.S. made it standard issue in 2003 in time for the Iraq War. The inventor of the pad, Bernard Bar Natan, is a self-proclaimed Brooklyn boy, a son of Holocaust survivors who immigrated to Israel in 79 and was drafted into the IDF in 83. When he was going into the military, friends told him to get a job or specialty to alleviate the boredom of grunt-level service. Immigrants, drafted as adults, serve only a few months usually in Israel, rather than the 3 years that are typical, and so they rarely serve in the military's upper reaches. One of the few specialties available is medic. As years wore on, through month-long stints in Miluim, the Israeli reserves, Bernard Bar Natan became annoyed. The bandages available could have manufacture dates as early as 1942 or as late as the previous month, yet they were essentially unchanged. Medics in the field were required to improvise pressure applications, magazines, rocks, canteens, whatever came to hand. The guns we used had improved, the planes flying above us had improved, but the bandages were the same, said Bar Natan. And so, in the early 90s, the Israeli government was encouraging startups through incubators, giving them low-interest loans. This encouraged Bar Natan to jump in the water with his idea for a newfangled bandage. In 2000, he took the bandage to Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, where the U.S. military trains medics. And soon his company, First Care, was selling the bandages for use by elite units, including the Rangers and the Airborne. 3 years later, the bandage was certified for standard use. The shooting of Gabby Giffords shined unexpected publicity on his brilliant invention. But, says Bar Natan, the real story is about her. Well, not entirely. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back our guest this morning, actress, singer, performer Judy Kaye, who has been in pretty much everything, pretty much everywhere. I think that's a compliment, actually. In the theater, if you're working, it's a compliment. You talked about your performances in Fiddler on the Roof with Theodore Bekel and Jan Pierce. You played another Jewish woman in a rather different show, Mary Magdalene, in five different companies of Jesus Christ Superstar. A little different experience.
Yes, yes. Well, the first time I did it was it was in the concert tour, so I was working with a bunch of rock and roll kids, so that was unique. But much to my surprise, I did it many times. That's a long time ago. It sort of comes in my what I like to call my my Middle Eastern musical part of my career. We lop in there, Kismet, you know, doing Kismet, and what else? There was another show called Oh Brother, which took place in a country not unlike Iran, going through a revolution, where I played the daughter of an Ayatollah. See, that's, you can do all sorts of things. That's acting.
So you also have done what they euphemistically call legitimate theater as opposed to the illegitimate theater that includes music.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You were in the Dybbuk. Tell us about that. That's an interesting and very intense play.
Dybbuk, that was here in Tucson, actually.
Wow.
And that was in the infant days of the Arizona Theater Company, when it was then called the Arizona Repertory. No, what was it called? Arizona Rep Theater? I can't remember.
It was
back in the Punic Wars in the 70s. and we played at the Civic Center, in the small theater at the Civic Center, which was not so small. And I worked with some amazing people in that company, Joseph Wiseman and Robert H. Harris, if you know who he was. It was pretty extraordinary. And the adaptation was by John Hirsch, who it was hugely successful, actually. He had done it first, I think, up at the Manitoba Theater Center, and he brought that company to Los Angeles, where they did it, and I was almost hired to play a small part and cover the role of Leah, but I did it here, and not many people have let me just sort of talk through the years. They usually, if there's a tune, they're much happier. I'm a musical theater animal, mostly, but it's kind of rarefied when they let me do a play, and that was one of the first times where I was allowed to do something like that for money, you know, actually, as a professional. And kind of fell in love with all over again with the state of Arizona because, of course, I was born here in Phoenix. I had spent time at the U of A when I was in high school. I don't know if they still have it, but there was a thing called the High School Fine Arts Summer Session, and I came down here a couple of summers when I was in high school and had a ball over at the U of A. And so the homecoming of getting to do the DuBook, and then 06, I believe it was 06, I was here with Souvenir. So it's been a wonderful sort of circular thing. It took a while for the circle to close, but I got here again.
You know, sooner or later it comes around in theater. You have performed with so many, you know, luminaries, people that were movie stars like Rock Hudson, people that were theater and movie people like Kevin Kline. If you had to pick, you know, your favorite people that you've performed with, who would they be?
Oh, my word. That is so hard.
Yeah, we specialize in that. You know, we're Jewish. We try to make it difficult.
A lot of actors can talk about their sort of negative experiences in the theater where they worked with somebody who was very difficult. That has happened to me so rarely that I can't even remember it. I have so many favorites. Kevin was definitely a wonderful, generous actor to work with. I was covering Madeline Kahn in a show called On the 20th Century on Broadway. And the first time I experienced working with Kevin was at a rehearsal, a very casual rehearsal, really, because the show was, we were moving into the theater on Broadway, but there had been a huge snowstorm, much like this year
we've gone through
in New York. Yeah, and they couldn't get the sets literally across the bridge, so they were stuck in Brooklyn or somewhere, and we had a rehearsal in a studio after having played the show up in Boston. And Madeline was unable to do this rehearsal, so I was pressed into service. And as soon as it happened, I had not done any rehearsals in her stead at that point, and Kevin just grabbed me, took me out in the hallway, and we worked out all the stuff so that when we did this run of the show, which I had not yet rehearsed, but I'd been thinking about, of course, I was able to really be present with him in the scenes. And when I was asked to take over the show, I'm sure it had everything to do with him knowing that I could handle it, you know, that he had worked with me that way. And then I went on as the understudy 9 times, and then I was asked to take over the role. And it was just a party. It was a ball working with him. He's got a marvelous sense of humor and humility about him. He hadn't become a movie star yet, but I told him. I first day of rehearsal, I was still the lowly understudy, and I was playing a small part of Lily Garland's maid. And I went up to him on a break, and I said, I just want you to know, you heard it here first from me. You will win the Tony Award for this role. And he did.
And you didn't because you filled in, ultimately, and then took over the role.
Right.
Does that rankle?
No, not really. It how could it? I did not, in fact, create that role from the beginning, and that's what it's supposed to be. There had been a slight precedent for my being nominated. Larry Kurt had been nominated for a Company, even though he had not actually opened the show. He had taken it over much the way I had. But, you know, it probably wasn't right that he was nominated either. You know, so, but I got to do the number on the Tonys, and people were very nice to me, and I won a Theater World Award for that, and I was nominated for a Drama Desk, and I got to play it for over a year, that magnificent role on that gorgeous show, and I got to go out on the road with it with Rock Hudson, and I worked with Imogene Coca in that show. I mean, and I met my husband doing that show.
Oh, yeah, and by the way.
Years later, for heaven's sake, so.
Not bad.
Yeah, and not bad at all.
And you did get a Tony later.
Eventually, yes, I did. And that was an amazing out-of-body experience. It was really a lot of fun. And it's been, I look at it, when I see it on my shelf, I look at it very fondly. I feel like I'm a very fortunate person to have it.
So let's talk about the difference between doing drama and comedy. You're doing Neil Simon, And people think comedy must be easier, and it's not.
No, well, it comes very naturally to me. And may I say that this play is not the set up joke kind of Neil Simon.
Right.
It's got a lot of content. It won a Pulitzer Prize. It's a marvelous family drama with great characters fully fleshed out and then wonderful human laughter in it. And yes, there are a couple of jokes here and there, but they come out of character. They're very beautifully integrated in this script. But playing comedy, I mean, for some people that might be very difficult. There is a musicality to comedy. It helps that I'm a musician. It helps that... But I'm also kind of a natural vaudevillian, you know. I love the science of comedy. I love the rhythm of comedy. And but it all has to come out of situation and character and have a reality behind it. And that's, I suppose, where the drama comes in. And isn't life pretty funny to begin with when you get right down to it? So I don't find any division between the two. For me, they are one and the same. I know that the famous line is on, who was it? Was it Edwin Booth on his deathbed supposedly said, someone said his dying heart, he says, no, comedy is hard.
Yeah. I've heard John Barrymore, but yeah, Edwin Booth will do.
Who knows? One of those guys. I find it very easy and very comforting and very natural. So.
Yeah, I think of Simon's routine from the Sunshine Boys about K's are funny.
Yeah, see, the K sound, the K sound.
The K,
yeah.
That's funny. Pickles are funny.
Pickles.
Tomatoes are
not
funny.
That's funny.
Is there a role that you'd still like to do that you haven't done yet?
Well, you know, the bus is probably passed for some of these roles that I would have liked to have done. You don't get to do everything that you want in life. It's just you don't. If you get to do even a teeny part of the stuff that you wanted to do, I count myself very lucky that I've had a lot of surprises along the way. You know, things I didn't know I wanted to do that I got to do, and there'll be more surprises. Part of the joy of being an actor is that when the phone rings, you know, you're just going along, minding your own business. The phone rings and your life changes because a new role is suddenly there. You know, someone wants you to do it. So now, what would I do? I played Mama Rose once. I think I should probably play it again. You don't work that hard on a part and just do it once. And there's probably a zillion more. I'm playing a role in this play that never crossed my radar. It never occurred to me that I would one day play Grandma Kurnitz, who is very, very different from anything I've ever done. She's a pretty dark character. She's an angry woman, a disappointed woman. You don't think she's funny. I didn't think she was funny when I first read it, and much to my surprise, there's a great deal of humor in her.
Yeah.
That's what I really crave, are the surprises. I don't have a list anymore of stuff I want to do.
Well, you've done so much, and I just hope you keep doing it. And the show is called Loss of Yonkers. It's a great show. I want to thank Judy Kaye for a terrific visit here on Too Jewish.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Doe a Deer to My Favorite Things,
in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Shamu Sadeh, the founder and director of Adama, largest Jewish educational farm in America, part of the renewable resources food movement that's been gaining momentum in recent years. He's a very interesting and bright guy. Our playout this morning comes from Chazan Alberto Mizrahi and his Sephardic Tzur Mishelo, a Shabbat Smirah song. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Tzur Mishelo Achanu, Tzur Mishelo Achanu, Tzur Mishelo Achanu, Marech Ve'onai, Savanu Ve'otarnu, Savanu Ve'otarnu, Savanu Ve'otarnu, Ki Kvar Amonai, Azaret Ulamor, Ovenu Avinu,
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.